You're listening to Blossoming Technologist, a podcast for young professionals in tech, discovering skills, careers, and tips for being in the tech industry. I'm your host, Marissa, and every week I interview a young professional to share their story on getting into the tech industry, what they currently do, and actionable advice for you navigating your own way. I'm so excited to have you here. In today's episode, we're joined by Trevor Newberry, the owner of Newberry Consulting in Birmingham, Alabama. As a consultant, Trevor helps clients build and release software products by coaching them through project and product management. He is also the co-founder of AppThink, a new product to help first-time founders learn how to build successful software products from ideation to launch with online training, coaching, and support. I am so excited for you to hear my conversation with Trevor, where we dig into product management, project management, and Scrum. What are the differences? How do you figure out if one of these roles is right for you? And make sure to listen until the end for enough book recommendations to fill a shelf. Let's jump in. Trevor, thank you so much for being here. I want to jump right into how you first got your start in the tech industry.
What a good question and what a story. So I'm from Alabama, which is kind of a wild place to be in the technology industry, not because like a ton of things are happening, because nothing's happening and then everything's happening in one tiny place. So I live in Birmingham, Alabama, which is an odd little sort of blue metro bubble in the middle of this rural super red state. So I went to school at UA, University of Alabama. If anybody follows football, they know that team. And I have a degree in political philosophy, which is the furthest thing from a technology-based degree. And I graduated right into the worst job market. I think that what we're experiencing right now is the only time it's been that bad or worse. I graduated in December 2007 and then tried to go to work in January 2008. And nothing was available. So I started waiting tables and bartending and making coffee. And I actually fell in love with the hospitality industry, right? Because it was what was available to me. So I knew I'd always had a sort of an entrepreneurial spirit. I wanted to run my own business, but the options were to go back to school and to go back into debt, right? To just, you know, saddle myself with grad school debt. Or what I decided was I could just learn on the job. So I used the hospitality industry as sort of a little laboratory, worked my way into management positions, did everything from bartending to cooking, writing recipes. I did professional chef work for a while, ran whole businesses. You could even find me on a ladder running electrical wiring at one point. And, you know, like did everything because, you know, at that time, there was nothing available. It was a wasteland. You know, we were in the middle of the Great Recession and, you know, nobody was hiring or nobody that was hiring a political philosophy degree. So I did that for a while. And then in 2017, I started Newberry Consulting because one of the places I was working for had a fire and it took about 4 months to get it repaired and back on the ground. And, you know, in that time I was like, I don't have anything to do. And I was very lucky that the owner was still cutting paychecks, right? He was using insurance money to keep his people on board. So I had a paycheck and I had nothing to do, which is fantastic. But I started Newberry Consulting because I was bored. And a good friend of mine and a mentor of mine said, hey, you know a lot about this industry, so why don't you try your hand at consulting? So I did. And I first targeted, I told you this was going to be a wild ride. So I started Newberry Consulting and I started working with hospitality clients because that was what I knew, right? That was the industry that I knew. And it turns out that's not a great industry for consulting work. Not a lot of money in restaurants, not a lot of money in bars, or not a lot of extra money for professional services. I've always been at an amateur level interested in the technology industry, software specifically, custom software. And I was really lucky that over the years, I developed some friendships with people that had started and run their own software development shops, working in accelerators. And they were really kind to put me in touch with and actually use me as a mentor to some of these early stage companies and early concepts. Did a lot of free work, probably did a lot of bad work, but slowly but surely learned the ropes and taught me. I read a ton of books. You can probably see in the background, there's stacks of books about working in technology and really wanted to understand where I could fit in that industry. Fast forward, I learned a lot, did a lot of work, learned that product management is really where my heart is at. I don't really have a desire to learn to code and to actually do the building, but what I care about is, you know, sort of how all the pieces fit together specifically for this industry. You know, how to build an amazing product, what are the steps to building an amazing product, what are the mindset sort of tricks that you need to have up your sleeve, and then how to coordinate and wrangle sort of all the crazy cats that are involved with that. So from marketing to sales to development to all of the above. And so here we are today, and Newbury Consulting is a product management consultancy to first-time and non-technical founders. That's the work that I do. And then we also have AppThink that is, we'll dig into that later, but basically that's an online resource for these same founders to learn the earliest stage skills. So that was a lot.
Quite a journey.
It is a journey. I told you it was going to be a big one.
Yeah. I actually really love, you were talking about how having these friendships and knowing these people kind of led into this career. Like, what is the power of having these relationships? How else has that helped you in your career?
It's been everything. I mean, we just talked about, you know, in sort of the pre-recording about a role that I've just accepted. And that was not something I was looking for. And it was my network. It was one of the relationships that I developed over years that brought me that opportunity. That's going to kind of open up a different topic, but I think that networking, and I always thought this way too, networking is annoying, right? Kind of has that sort of like LinkedIn ladder climber kind of feel to it, which I, by the way, I hate LinkedIn. Connect with me on LinkedIn, but I hate LinkedIn. It's like all the worst parts of Facebook, but everybody's a ladder climber on Facebook. So it's like, it annoys me to death. Sorry. But I think that we think about it the wrong way. I think about networking in terms of, I'm really interested in building relationships with people and hearing their stories. And really and truly, this is going to sound cliche. And if you don't feel it, then it is cliche, but truly just trying to be as helpful as possible. I never shy away from giving away my time, my energy. If it's available, I will give it away because it's really valuable and builds those relationships. And, you know, one of these days when so-and-so has a connection that they're going to think of Trevor, right? You know, that may make it sound kind of icky, but I mean, I think that it's my favorite way that I've been able to build a career. So I think people, you don't have to go to networking events. You don't have to do this. Reach out individually, you know, reach out to people individually, go get coffee when we can do that again, you know, go get lunch, show up to their accelerator and volunteer your time. Just be generous. And those things do pay dividends.
Yeah, I think reframing networking as just helping people has helped me be better with it, because also like during college and early career, like I hated the whole LinkedIn thing and like trying to market yourself. I'm like, what am I going to market? I just want to like meet people and help people.
I'm a person. Yeah.
just connect with me and we'll have fun.
I think you should always be looking for opportunities to give away your time and your energy. If it's available to you, you should always be looking for that opportunity.
Yeah, that's such great advice. So you talked about your two companies and what you're doing with that. So I kind of want to dig into, since you are a product managers are really focusing on like the problem space and figuring out how to solve those problems, how to work with the users and all of that. So like, what are these problems that are common for these first-time founders that you're helping?
Sure. So I think that's a really great way to put that. You know, product management has been around for a while, but it's really only recently kind of coming into vogue as a legitimate role in the technology industry. Software and technology, especially in the early stages of a product, the whole story of that is a story of risk. It's a story of unknowns, right? And that's the most dangerous thing for an early stage concept and an early founder. And what I see is that people are not aware of that, right? They're not aware of how many unknowns there are that they're entering into. And so the biggest problem that I see is that they usually, you know, especially these non-technical and first-time founders that don't have any experience doing this kind of work, they usually, you know, they have a big idea, they have conversations with people, but they're usually reinforcing their biases, right? They get super pumped about it and they run out to a development shop and they hire them for six figures to build something that's the furthest thing from an MVP. It's just the scope is huge and complicated and messy. And a year later and $200,000 later, they have a product that no one cares about, that's clunky, full of bugs, it doesn't work the way they want it to, and they're super pissed off and they're jaded, and it just, they don't take the time to understand what risk is in that context and how many things we just don't know.
I kind of am curious, like, I know you're talking about risk, but I guess, is it also just like understanding the actual problem of users? Like, do mm-hmm. first-time founders understand that? Or is it more of like, they're just like, oh, I have this idea. Like, let's go, let's build it.
Yes, that's what happens. And I have been a part of multiple projects that have ended really, really poorly because of that. And this kind of led to AppThink. The thing that really is heartbreaking is that my ideal scenario is that I'm brought into concepts at the idea stage, so I can start to help coach and guide in that way. But what really happens is I get brought in to put out fires. They've already done that and they've already spent a bunch of their money and they're super angry with their development shop, or they fired a freelancer or some, you know, offshored developer. It's a mess. And then I come in and what I've gotten really good at is picking up the pieces and putting them back together. But it's heartbreaking because people lose a lot of money and they lose a lot of time that way. And money is a resource, you know, money. It's not just about the actual number of dollars. That's money that could be going towards solving a big problem, towards making a really big difference with your product. And every dollar that's wasted is a dollar that doesn't go to that, that doesn't go to actually making a contribution to people's lives through your product. You know, software is unique, but it's a product, right? You know, it's a product just like the, you know, the mug that I'm drinking coffee out of, right? And we want to build things and ship things that make a difference for people, that solve big problems.
Yes. It's interesting because you were talking about how product management is almost like a new role that people are kind of yeah. like being like, oh yeah, that does belong in software. And I think it's so important. Like, you need a product manager at all phases of development. Yes. I come from the software development side of things. And like, I work every day with my product manager to make sure that we're on track building what users actually want and testing all of it. Like, there's so much that a product manager needs to do.
Yeah.
And so you really need to be there from the very beginning all the way yep. to the end.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this and you have an idea for a software product, find yourself a product person. Even if it's just like part-time or like a handful of hours a week that you pay them for, find yourself an experienced product person and bring them into the idea.
Yeah. They need to call up Trevor.
Yeah. Give me a shot. I'm not going to have a whole lot of time these days coming up soon, but I'm happy to talk anytime I can.
Everyone listening is going to call you and be like, hey, I need a product manager.
Like, oh my God, where were you guys 3 years ago? No, I'm kidding.
Okay. So you do product management. I know you also do project management. So can you yeah. explain the difference?
Yeah. So project management is basically, I mean, I'm going to use some simple heuristics. It's basically keeping the wheels on the bus, right? Like, a project manager will do some customer interview sort of problem discovery, but not a lot of it. Really, what a project manager is responsible for doing is receiving feature requirements, bugs, and managing that workflow on behalf of the software development team, right? So they're mostly concerned with capacity, right? They're like, hey, we got to do these 50 things. You know, let's put them in priority order and then let's get them into the software development team's hands and make sure that all goes smoothly, that we can deliver on time, that we're delivering good quality. A product manager does, especially in the early stage, and actually oftentimes wears both hats, right? Oftentimes is managing the work, like work in progress, to use an agile, you know, term here, but managing work in progress, but really, as you described earlier, is concerned with user enablement, with discovering the problems, with validating the concept, right? These are all kind of jargony terms, but I haven't figured out a more succinct way to put them. Basically, especially the early stage, we want to find out, like, what is the actual big burning problem, right? That people actually care about, that, you know, they're willing to trade something of value for, right? Because a product needs to be sold, right? And not every product is built to make a bunch of money, but maybe that unit of value looks like building an email list, or maybe it looks like, there's a number of different ways we can measure value. But, you know, do we understand the right problem to solve? And then we start to drill down on how does that need to get solved? And we use our user base or our ideal users to sort of inform, you know, there have been times when we've had a number of customer interviews, we've done a number of problem interviews, and we found out that a mobile app is probably not the best solution, you know? And that's always a really interesting and sometimes frustrating, but interesting conversation to have, because, you know, people fall in love with the idea of, like, I'm going to build a mobile app and everyone's going to download it. And it's like, actually, what you need is a Squarespace site with a pretty simple typeform attached to it. And then if that works, then we'll talk about a mobile app or we'll talk about a web app. But I hope that is a clear enough distinction. You know, project management is a very important role. And the way I described it may sound like, oh, it only does this. Project management is incredibly essential. Managing work in progress, understanding your team's capacity and being able to work within that is super, super important. But a product manager is broad and wide ranging. There's project management, There's customer discovery, there's user enablement, there's sales, there's marketing. At the highest levels, you're coordinating all of these pieces towards solving a big problem and making sure the product is on track to do that.
Yeah. And I think it's also important to note that different companies have different definitions of product management, especially where like sometimes you're a product manager and all you do is thinking about like the problem space and maybe like giving stuff to developers, whatever.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's more of like, oh yes, you're doing the marketing, you're doing the project management, like you are doing everything. So I think it really depends. And if people are interested in product management, you really have to look into what those specific companies define as their roles.
Yeah. I think to talk about product management just a little bit more, one of the most exciting things to me about product management and why I think it's so critical, you have to be cross-functional. We talk about in Scrum and Agile methodology, we talk about cross-functional teams. A product manager has to wear so many hats and be capable. You don't have to be the expert. You don't have to be the best at it, but you have to be good enough to navigate those spaces. You have to be good enough to navigate, you know, what does the sales team need to move this product? And this is assuming you're down the line and you've got a product. What does the marketing team need? How is the marketing communicating to sales? And then most importantly, how are those two teams communicating with the development team, with the actual product team? You know, how are we taking, you know, the learning from our sales teams and our marketing teams and then, you know, moving that into, you know, feature level sort of decisions that are being made? You have to be able to do all of it. Now, at the earliest stages, you're going to wear all those hats. You're going to do a lot of project management. You're going to do a lot of working with your development team, whether that's a shop or internal. And as you grow, those product roles sort of start to expand, right? The circle gets a little bit wider. You take a little bit more of that sales sort of enablement role and that marketing enablement role. But yeah, I guess the takeaway is if you want to be a product manager, you got to be comfortable living in a lot of different spaces. And I find that incredibly exciting. I'm sure some people find that incredibly scary.
Yeah, I'm wondering, with all those different responsibilities as a product manager, how do you like balance that? Isn't that kind of overwhelming?
Mm-hmm. It can be. I think the key to managing that is focusing on the problem, right? Really, it does all come back to problem space, like you described earlier. As a product manager, your responsibility is to make sure that the company that you're working for, the team that you're working with, is delivering a product that solves the right problem for your customers, right? And so when you use that as the lens through which you view the work that you're doing, that helps you to sort of cull the elements of sales and marketing and blah, 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 whatever. Cull those elements that really aren't essential to that, right? You know, that's really the key, is to say, you know, what do I need to know from all these pieces of the business that's going to help me build a product that solves a big problem? And so it is overwhelming, but if you're doing it right, you know, if you're actually managing yourself and your time, your energies correctly, you're probably filtering a lot of noise out and directing all of that energy towards, how do we build this product in the way that solves the big problem? And product is another good conversation to have too, because at the earliest stages, you're building like a mobile app, right? Or something like that, or a web app. And it's discrete. It's one thing. You go to like the Amazon level, and Amazon has product managers for like every single piece of their business, right? So there's people that are working on, you know, the Amazon e-commerce, but also AWS, and they're working with, you know, Amazon shopping. Like they're doing these stores now that are, you know, touchless stores, right? Like there are product managers that are working on every single little piece all under the Amazon umbrella. And that gets even more complicated and also more fun.
Yeah. I always find it so interesting when I, since I'm in the technology space, like I'll hear about, oh, this product launch, and someone will be like, oh yeah, like I'm the product manager on that. You never really think about that unless you're in the technology field. Cause you're like, oh yeah, like people built that, they coded that. But you don't think about the people who went into the planning and the team management and like all these different things that you need for a successful product.
Uh-huh. I agree. It gets a little jargony, right? Like when we talk about product management and people are like, product management, project management and software. And then all of a sudden you start like listing off all these terms and phrases that people's eyes glaze over. Really at the heart of it, like product management is about the people that you're serving. It's about the customers that you're serving. And the sort of spirit of the job is to really build things that help people solve problems. That is the heart of it. And that's why it's so satisfying and exciting to do that work. And it's also why it's so critical to have on your team.
Yeah. Yeah. You have that one person who their focus is literally the end user. We have a recent episode where I talked with Lily, episode 10, and she was talking about how as a developer, she saw that she would give an app to users and see that they only use like 5% of the features that she actually built. And it's like, whoa, like as a developer, you don't think about who's actually using the app and everything. But then when you have the product manager or maybe even user experience researchers doing the actual work to like make sure you're building features that people will use, it makes such a better product. And that leads to more success, more money, more whatever, more helping people.
Yeah, it's such cool work. I love it. And I can talk about it all day, as you can probably see. And I'm so grateful to have found it, frankly, because like I described, it was a kind of a winding path to getting here. But I just love it. And I think that it's something that, you know, if you're listening to this and you're like, what am I going to do with my life? Or you're listening to this and you're like, I have a product idea. Think about product. I really think that viewing your idea, your concept, your job through the lens of helping people, being helpful, providing value, it's just so critical and really it leads to a very satisfying kind of work to do.
I'm actually super curious if people are interested in getting involved in either product or project management. I know you read a lot of books. Do you have any book recommendations?
I have too many. I'm a big believer that the best teacher, and this is how we're building AppThink, the best teacher is experience, right? So reading books is great. I love reading books. They can be incredibly insightful and give you a lot of learning, but that learning is usually sort of like stored energy, right? It doesn't do a lot for you until you actually put the things into practice. So what I would tell people, if you're interested in getting into product or project management, read some books. The product book from the product school is great. Inspired by Marty Kagan. In terms of managing sort of your effort, Measure What Matters, which is kind of the book on OKRs, like do that. Like those, I could go all day, you know, on books. But the most important thing is to do some work. Do it cheap or for free if that's all you can get, but do some work and get some learning out of that. You're not going to know if it's something that you want to do until you actually have an opportunity to do that, which is the case with, you know, any number of careers. But I think that finding an accelerator that'll let you work with a student's concept, you know, not because it's not valuable, but because it's an easy entry point, right? Everybody's looking for mentors and people that, you know, are willing to donate and volunteer their time. But get in there and do some work alongside your reading. You will not actually understand how to do the work and whether or not you'd like it unless you do some work.
Okay, awesome. Such good advice. You need to do it before you understand if you like it or not.
I mean, we've built, I talk about AppThink, and I'm not just pitching AppThink, but just as an example, when we were looking around, it was like all these Udemy courses are out there, and there are people that teach project and product management, but the volume of teaching that's out there and then the volume of quality work in that space are incongruent, right? And so the hypothesis that we had about it was people are learning in their heads, but they're not actually able to do it. They're not actually able to learn it. So we structured AppThink to be, you know, on the front end is more of a traditional videos, lecture kind of learning, but we actually transitioned really quickly into building a fictional company and applying the concepts to the fictional company. And then allowing you to go out and do the work on your own concept, but then we're setting up a, you know, dedicated Slack channels that we're in at certain times to answer questions and to help you put those into practice. Everything's sort of pushing people coming through AppThink towards go do some stuff, all right? We're going to teach it to you, but that's like 25% of it. The rest of it is like, let's do some stuff with that because that's the only way you really sort of internalize it.
So, okay, we got to dig into AppThink a little bit. So you're giving them the opportunity to work with a fake company and understand the product space and then having like a Slack community to ask questions and like have accountability. Yeah. What else do you provide to people to allow them to delve into that product space?
Yeah. So, you know, I took a lot of my inspiration for building that from Seth Godin. Are you familiar with Seth Godin? Mm-hmm. He's great. Everybody should listen to Seth Godin. He's just wonderful. It's all very high level. He's kind of a, you know, he couches himself as a teacher, but it's all very valuable. So read Seth Godin, listen to Seth Godin, but his workshops are very, very similar. I mean, I'm not ashamed to say I ripped off a lot of that. And is that it's all about getting into it and doing it. And the community part of it, you know, I guess maybe an unsatisfactory answer to your question is that the community part of it, I think, is going to be key for people. That's really what we provide because it's not just about Dave or I like jumping in there and answering questions. I did the Podcasters workshop with Seth Godin, and one of the most valuable things was uploading like intros and saying, hey, can you give me feedback on this? You know, tell me what you think about this. That really, really helped refine a lot of the work that I was doing and a lot of the understanding of the kind of work that I was doing. If you haven't picked up on this from the conversation, it hasn't quite launched yet. But what we're going to do eventually is put together things like worksheets and, you know, hopefully some physical products that help people track. Believe it or not, being in tech, I'm a big believer in pen and paper.
Makes me a huge too.
Difference. Yeah. So in fact, I've developed like a fountain pen habit. Like I collect fountain pens now, which is like, who would have ever thought I'd do that? But you know, I'm a big believer in that. So we'll put together some PDF resources, hopefully some physical products to help you track what you're doing. But again, I think the most valuable thing that we can provide for people is an opportunity to share the work they're doing and to get feedback on it in real time or as close to real time as possible. So not a lot of extras if that's what you were digging for, but that's what we're, you know, we'll sort of reset the fictional company each cohort. We're doing it in a cohort model. So we'll reset it. And what it's really exciting is I think the fictional company will probably look like as many different ways as we have cohorts, which is going to be really interesting to see how that evolves. But we really are just intent on you have to practice, you have to do it. So the concepts of product management and project management are actually not that difficult, really, like on paper, like reading the books, it's like, yeah, this all makes a ton of sense. Like it's intuitive. Doing it is hard. So that's where we focus.
I think it's easy to underestimate the value of community, but I've definitely seen, like, I'm in a writing community right now, and like, you feel so empowered and supported when you have other people going through the same thing. And then you're like more motivated to just keep going and keep trying. And then like you have these friends that you can talk to and bounce ideas off. It's so cool.
I agree. And one of the other things talking about that, I run into this all the time with founders and they're like, well, I don't want to share my idea. And this is something that we tell people all the time is like someone stealing your idea is like not even in the top 10 list of things you should be worried about. It's so hard to build a product, especially in software. It's so expensive to build a product that if anybody is willing to put forth the effort and resources to steal your idea, they can have it. Because it's hard. No bones about it. Like software is just as hard as any other physical product. So one thing I'm anticipating is people being like, well, I don't want someone to steal it. It's like, they're not going to steal it. They're just not. It's a huge pain. You know, I say that in jest, but in reality, I mean, I've seen people take 6 to 12 months and six figures to build an MVP. You know, I think that was foolish, but that's, you know, we see that like that kind of effort is really, really hard. So get into your community and share your ideas because the feedback is incredibly valuable and no one's going to steal it. And if they do, you're like one of like 5% of people that happens to, and we can deal with that later, but yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's also like, let's say someone did steal your idea. Like they're never going to do it the same way you would. You bring so many different things to that idea that it's going to be very different from what some random person is going to do.
How many different kinds of sneakers exist in the world, right? Like I use this example all the time. It's like people didn't stop launching sneaker brands, right? Because there were a bunch of other sneakers. It's fine to have competition in the space. Like that's a good sign. If you have a product idea, especially for software, and you can't find anybody doing it, you should actually be a little suspicious of your idea. There's probably a reason no one's done it, right? You might be a unicorn. You might have come up with something that like no one else has ever thought of. It's unlikely, right? It's highly unlikely that that's the case. We always encourage people when they're like, I found three different competitors this weekend, just cruising the app store. And it's like, good, cool. We'll do it better. But that tells us that somebody wants what you're trying to build. So that's a good data point.
Yeah. Oh, that's so true. Oh my gosh. Okay. I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about Scrum because I feel like this is kind of some jargon that gets mentioned a lot in the tech industry. And I feel like it's kind of hard to understand exactly what it means. So as an expert in Scrum, okay. So you're a licensed Scrum Master, right?
Yeah, I am. I love that title. I tried to get my wife to call me Scrum Master from here on out and she refused. I was like, well, from here on out, my name is Scrum Master, not Trevor.
Okay. So like what is Scrum and why is it important?
Scrum is just it's a lightweight framework to manage risk. That's pretty much all anybody needs to know about it, unless you're going to like actually work with it, right? I think the best way to describe it is to sort of describe the environment in which it applies to, because it's very specific. It doesn't work for everything. You know, there are people out there like agile trainers that'll say like, Scrum it's a panacea. It'll cure COVID. It's like, no, it won't. It's a tool that gets used in certain instances. So when you go to build any product, but software especially, you heard me talk about this earlier, but I describe it this way. There's more unknowns than there are knowns. And unknowns represent risk, right? They represent opportunities for you to waste all your money or to build the wrong product or, et cetera, so on and so forth. So what Scrum does is it manages the work that's being done in a really careful way that allows you to be sure that you're building and delivering the right thing at the right time. So if you're interested at all in software development, we can dive even deeper. But I think that that's really what people need to understand is that Scrum is sort of a counterintuitive way of managing work that ensures that you are not getting the cart before the horse, if you will. It ensures that you're working on elements of your project that are of the highest value, right? And delivering those incrementally and iterating on those things incrementally so that you're building the right thing at the right time. You're not building any more. You're not building the whole thing. You're not building too little. You're building the right thing at the right time. And so what we do in that sense is we use Scrum to take a look at the work and to organize our team in a way that they're highly enabled to decide what is the right thing at the right time, right? And there's all these like fun names like Scrum Master and Product Owner and all this stuff. And there's sort of a hierarchy to it. But at the high level, I would just say like it's a way to manage the risk that you are incurring by trying to build a software product or a technology product.
Okay. So then we've talked a lot about a lot of different roles so far. How does Scrum Master compare to then like project manager and product manager?
Yeah. Where project management comes into play, Scrum is project management. So a project manager can really participate in that process at any level, right? But Scrum is really a project management framework, right? That's really what it exists to do. Product management is sort of outside of the scope of Scrum. It can participate in that project management, but it has a wider authority over different areas and is responsible for multiple different areas. So you have, in descending order, you have stakeholders, right? Which are the people that own the project and the product. So those are, people actually putting up the money to build it. Then you have a product owner, and the product owner is receiving requests and requirements from the stakeholders. And the product owner is then organizing those into what we call a backlog. And the backlog is basically just the big list of stuff that people want to build. The product owner needs to be able to say no to things that don't tackle the problem, that are not addressing the real big problem. And then what's left needs to be able to prioritize that backlog. So a top of the list is the most valuable thing to build right now. They then hand that to the team. So they skip the Scrum Master, and we'll get to the Scrum Master thing. They then hand that to the team. The team is the development team, cross-functional, co-located. Basically, it means hopefully you're working on a number of different frameworks and languages. You're in the same space, whether it's digital or physical. And the team is what takes that backlog and says, okay, we understand how much work we can get done in a discrete amount of time. And they pick those things out and they say, for this next, what they call a sprint, we're going to do these things because these are the highest priority and we can do this much stuff at once, right? The Scrum Master is essentially a coach. The Scrum Master is an enabler, right? So the Scrum Master says, what do you guys need? What's in your way? Make sure that you're adhering to good principles, good Scrum principles. That person is responsible for coaching the team, managing the team, participating in grooming the backlog, but they're essentially a glorified, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but a glorified coach, right? They're making sure that the team can do the work at the highest level that they can possibly do it. That's what their job is. So that's all the big roles in Scrum.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I have one more question related to Scrum, which is actually Scrum and project management. Because again, this is like people who maybe are considering different career opportunities, stuff like that. Are there any like skills or personality traits that people might have that might be like, oh, maybe I'd be good as a Scrum Master, or maybe I'd be good as a project manager?
So in terms of, talking about the people or the types of people and personalities, I actually don't think that there is one. I think that anybody can do this kind of work. In fact, I really think it's valuable to have introverted people and extroverted people and type A people and not type A people, right? To be participating in this work, because one of the things that's super valuable is perspective. You need different perspectives on the world, different ways of interacting with the world, right? If you've ever had that experience of looking at a problem and saying like, that is the problem. And then turning around to someone close to you and they go, no, that's the problem. You go, oh, holy crap. I didn't even think about that. That's so valuable. So I think maybe some of the core competencies or core interests is I do think that you need to be comfortable with wearing a lot of hats. You need to be comfortable with understanding, you know, I call it enough to be dangerous about sales and marketing and development and all this stuff. Like you need to be able to competently navigate those spaces. You don't have to be the best at it. You don't have to be the lead of those teams, but you need to be able to navigate those spaces competently. So having a really curious mind and wanting to know how all these pieces work together is, I think, probably the core characteristic. But personality types, like, come on. All of that stuff is really valuable.
I love that. Enough to be dangerous.
Yes. And if you're not careful, it is dangerous because you'll get into a sales meeting as a product manager and start spouting off. And they're like, you don't know what you're talking about. And it's like, yeah, you're right. I have overstepped. So I'm going to shut up now.
Oh my gosh. Okay, cool. So I actually want to start wrapping up. So I have a few final questions for you, which are more like not related to project management or anything. So my first one is, what is your favorite book?
Oh my God. That is an incredibly hard question to answer.
Hardest question I've asked.
That's really hard. Personally, I'm a huge fan of the Harry Potter series, which is cliche, but like I'm of the age, I don't know how old you are, but I'm 35. And the first book came out when I was like 11 or 12. I grew up with Harry Potter, like Essentially. The very last book came out my senior year in college. So it's an interwoven part of the fabric of Trevor, right? So as far as just like pleasure reading, I know it's not high literature, but it's the best. I recommend everybody read it.
I know. It's so good.
In terms of business stuff, I don't have one. I have them in like sections. Like, so if you're thinking about product management or if you're thinking about branding and messaging and positioning, and I have a bunch of them and I named some earlier, but like in terms of, you know, I'm a really big fan of orienting your work towards the highest and best effort. So Measure What Matters by John Doerr is sort of the book on OKRs. And I'm a huge fan of the OKR framework. Big, big fan. If you don't know anything about it, look it up. It stands for Objectives and Key Results. It's fantastic. Messaging and Positioning, Building a Story Brand by Donald Miller is great. It's a little bit basic. It gets more complicated than that book really provides, but it's kind of the 80-20 rule. Like if you follow that framework, you're going to get like 80% of the results out of just doing that, right? Sales is something that's really important to me because I run my own business and I have to do sales, right? So The Snowball System by a guy named Mo Bunnell is the best sales framework I've ever run into. And then in terms of product management, I'm going to give you three because they are all different and they all tackle product in different ways and they're just all really critical. So Hooked by Nir Eyal is really, really wonderful. It's a little bit controversial because it's how to build habit-forming products and that's a little bit of a touchy subject, but it's a really marvelous book and gives you at a tactical level, like how to build software products in a way that encourages active and regular use. Product Book by The Product School is really good. That's just more of, it's not a textbook, but I treat it kind of like a textbook. And then Inspired by Marty Kagan. That's just a lovely book. Oh, and everyone needs to read The Lean Startup. It's becoming a little bit dated as it gets older and older, but it's kind of a foundational book. So that's Eric Ries that wrote that one. So
yeah,
you asked a dangerous question.
I see that. Actually funny. I have a few of those books loaded up in my Kindle and I just haven't gotten to them yet, but I have read Inspired and it's such a good book. I totally agree.
Yeah. The only reason I add the product book in there with it is that Marty's focus is more on like mature companies. He's a little bit more of like the enterprise level company. And that's not always applicable to folks that are kind of just getting started out or just building their first product. So the product book is probably a little bit more applicable, but both are wonderful.
Thank you. What is something absurd that you love doing?
I mentioned it earlier, and this is really surprising and not surprising, collecting fountain pens. It's so weird. I've spent embarrassing amounts of money on fountain pens. I'm holding one right here. When I realized, this was not but a few years ago, that when I wrote things down, I processed them differently. Working in tech, it's like, oh, I've got a billion different pieces of software that can help me manage my projects and manage my time, blah, blah, blah. Writing things down, I still do things on pen and paper. And then I was like, well, I might as well have a really nice pen. And my wife, who is an incredibly talented artist and calligrapher, was like, try a fountain pen. So she bought me this kind of, you know, dinky $20 fountain pen for Christmas just to try it out. And I did. And I was like, this is amazing. So I love collecting fountain pens. I love it. It's just a lot of fun. And it's a very analog thing. I live in software and it's just an analog thing that I love to put my hands on. And it's really satisfying. I've like sat down just to like write the alphabet with new pens. And it's just a lot of fun.
Wow, that's so cool. I've never had a fountain pen before, but maybe I'll need to get one for myself. So next question, what is one lesson that has taken you the longest to learn?
I think that one of the hardest things for me is the temptation to constantly be measuring myself against other people in the industry. So I work for myself. I work at home. I don't have a background in technology. I have a background in politics and a number of other unrelated things, right? And so entering the technology space and then being sort of siloed, right, is kind of tough. It's kind of tough because you look around and you see all these big moves that people are making and you're like, whoa, what? I'm behind, or I'm not. Oh God, I can't believe I made that mistake. So I think the lesson that has taken me the longest to learn and I'm still learning is how to have a really gracious assessment of my own capabilities and the things that I've done and to not be too hard on myself. You need to be kind to yourself and gracious. You're never a static person. Like you're constantly growing and evolving your skill sets and you as a person. So you need to understand that where you are at any given fixed point in time is not where you're going to be at the next fixed point in time and so on and so forth. And so I've learned to orient myself towards saying, you know, I want to be better at this. And so instead of working backwards and looking backwards, looking forwards of like, I think I see a skill gap here. Let me see what I can do to fill that skill gap.
Yeah, amazing. So one final question. The podcast is Blossoming Technologists, and it's this idea that we are all still growing and changing and blossoming. So I always love to ask, what is one skill, whether in your field or just in your personal life, that you're currently working on?
It's actually my personal life. And I'm a really big fan of having these kinds of things because I came to what I'm doing in a very non-traditional way, but every single lesson that I've learned along the way has been invaluable. So big fan of having completely unrelated hobbies and interests and things that you're trying to get good at. So I grew up playing music. And in fact, I met my wife playing music, did it professionally for a while, but over the last few years, focusing on like more career stuff, I've let that go. And so I'm really trying right now to pick my guitar back up and, you know, get those chops back and learn new skills there because the intangible connections between that and what I'm doing professionally or otherwise is just, it's incredibly invaluable. So learning the guitar again, you know, picking it back up and teaching that to myself again. But it's one thing, kind of the high level of that takeaway is like, don't neglect your hobbies for your career. Don't neglect your interests for your career. Those things are really, really valuable. And I'm the worst at pushing them to the side to focus on career because I'm a, like total type A, you know, one on the Enneagram, like focus, focus, focus. But don't push those things aside because they really round you out as a person and even as a professional in ways that you won't understand.
Yeah. And like that downtime allows you to build connections. Like when your brain is not focusing on product or project management, you build those connections and you come back to the problem. You're like, oh, like that was it. Oh, yep, so exactly. Good. That's exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited about it too.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. This was such a lovely conversation. I loved getting to know you and learning about your career and everything.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for having me. This was a really nice conversation.
It was so cool to learn firsthand the differences between product management, project management, and Scrum. If you want to hear more from Trevor, make sure to check out his company, AppThink's new podcast about turning your big ideas into software products. All of Trevor's book recommendations, ways to connect, and links to his companies and podcast are in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening and see you next week where we'll continue blossoming together.